Okay, here we go. For me, the best place to see a rock and roll show is an arena. I mean, look, I love our clubs, I love our theaters, save our stages, but for me, the magic really happens at the arena show. My first arena show, Kiss at Madison Square Garden 2009, absolutely life-changing. And I'm missing the arena show most of all right now as we're locked down and cannot see any kind of shows. So David Kells, I thought would be an incredible guest for this podcast to scratch my arena itch. In case you don't know, he is the executive vice president of Bridgestone Arena and the Predators. It is his job to oversee everything. I'm a huge arena nerd, and this conversation was so fun. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. If you're an arena nerd like I am, you're going to love this. And Bridgestone is one of my favorite arenas. I think wherever you live, that arena becomes your favorite arena. I love the TD Garden in Boston, where I lived for a little bit. I love the Staples Center. I love Madison Square Garden. And I love Bridgestone. You know, it's the truth. Okay, here we go. I'm done talking. Let's dive in. David Kells, episode 54. Here we go. Well, the first thing on my mind is people are actually getting back into Bridgestone right now. You guys have had capacity open. I think, is it like 10% right now for Predator games?
We're like at 17%. So it's a couple thousand people. And it's really fun to see how much noise 17% or, you know, a couple thousand people can make. And, you know, we started in early January with a couple hundred and, you know, add some people each time as we worked through our systems and made sure everybody felt safe and comfortable. And yeah, it's fun. It's just such a positive experience to be, for us, doing what we do, you know, putting people back to work and entertaining people. And for all the fans that come out, it's a piece of normal back. You know, it's something that we were doing 12 months ago, something that seems and feels fun and regular again. So I joke that, you know, you're dodging hugs from folks, you know, ushers and ticket takers who have worked there for 20 years are so excited to be back to work and want to say hi. And then, you know, the fans are the same way. But, you know, we're not high-fiving strangers after goals anymore. You know, so you got to cheer on your own.
So why was January the right moment? Or like, what was happening that we felt comfortable in January that we could finally let some people into the building?
Well, on our side, it's when the NHL season started. So, you know, across the NHL was looking at a whole bunch of different things of, you know, how the conditions were right in the country. Well, I guess both countries, US and Canada, what all the markets felt like, you know, other areas of the country could open up for some fans. Some people couldn't, but everything kind of came together in late December, did a quick training camp to find out where the rosters were and make sure that the guys could get moving and loose again, and then started up in early January. And we've been working with our health department since last summer to find out safe ways to operate. Last summer, we had a training camp before the playoffs started. And so we worked with them and the NHL to develop protocols. And then along the way, you know, we did some small things, some meetings and some dinners in the arena to get people back to work and work on some systems. And then, yeah, that slowly came together and then grew to where we are today.
Do you, because I've heard you say how collaborative you are with other venues, how if you need advice from another venue manager, you'll pick up the phone, call them, and they're very willing to collaborate. Have you been talking with other venues through this process? Like, have you learned anything by doing that?
Oh, yeah. So locally, we put together a statewide call. So everybody from, you know, Thompson Bowling in Knoxville to the Orpheum and FedEx Forum in Memphis and folks in between. So it's privately run college venues or city run venues, just sharing information, especially early on. You know, we all left work and thought, hey, maybe by June or July, we'll start doing, you know, the wheels will start turning again. So you wanted those quick updates. You wanted to see how things were developing kind of fast. And then it just came on to essentially a marathon of where we've been doing this for 10, 11 months now. But different things come up, you know, there's the Save Our Stages Act that we were all sharing information on, and just the first person to do something, everybody wanted to hear what it was like. So yeah, just that constant communication and that collaboration.
Is there a standard way, like I know like Madison Square Garden just opened and I was reading that how they are sending kits, I think, like they're sending testing kits to people who are going to come. That's part of the price of a ticket, right? Is Bridgestone doing that also, or are there guidelines that everyone's following, or is every venue kind of taking its own precautions with it?
there are some big chunks that everybody's doing. You know, everybody's mandating masks. Everybody's having people work. Your seating pods are 6 feet apart. And, you know, you have to come and sit with the group that you bought a ticket with. Those types of things. Screening for employees. You know, everybody fills out a questionnaire, gets their temperature checked. All those types of things are kind of industry standard. But some things fluctuate state to state, region by region, and what's practical for each venue.
Why is the venue community so collaborative? Like, to me, that's interesting. Like, isn't everyone kind of in competition, or are they far enough apart geographically that doesn't really matter?
I don't know the origin of it. This is the only business I've ever worked in. It's the only way I've ever operated. It's really, really unique, I think, that, you know, I can cold call somebody that I've never talked with before and say, hey, we have X show coming up. What were some quirks or some things we need to be aware of? And they'll just spill everything to you, you know, all the good, the bad, the ugly, everything. So you can do it better. And so you can, you know, put on a great show for fans. It's a wonderful environment. It's a wonderful community. Because you would think naturally, I want to make sure somebody else doesn't do it as good. So they don't get the show next time.
You would think Bridgestone's a hot arena. You guys win a lot of awards. You would think people want to, you know, cut you off.
Everybody's an open book and, wanting to help somebody else do just as good a job as they can.
Absolutely. So I think venues, like weirdly, music fans and venues weirdly get very attached, or fans become very attached to music venues.
Oh, yeah.
I grew up in New York, Madison Square Garden, my favorite venue of all time. Living in Nashville for several years, I now have a deep connection to Bridgestone. Is there anything that you guys think about to sort of make the venue more part of the fans' life? Like, for example, the Cell Block, you know, 303, like there's things that you guys do. Is that part of a discussion? How do we make the venue 100%. More relatable to fans?
Yeah, we don't want to be just a big gray box that somebody walks into and sees a hockey game or sees a concert. We want you to know that you're at Bridgestone Arena, that you're in downtown Nashville, because that's part of the fun. I mean, when you travel to see a show or travel to see a road game, you want to feel like something's a little bit different. Something's, you know, unique. And so, you know, Nashville Predators fans years ago started those chants. Those were theirs. That was not something that was planted by the team or the game entertainment.
Yeah. Department. How does that work? Like, do they just start like passing notes around to do these chants, or does a group do it and everyone does it? Were there some that got lost to the time? Like that blows my mind, how those chants come
I'm
together.
Sure there are some that have failed, but other things, you know, we obviously see something great and help support it. The standing ovation. I forget how many years ago that started. It was a game late in the season against St. Louis. And our fans just stood and started cheering during a TV timeout. It was an emotional time in the game. It was pivotal. And our game presentation folks at the time said, hey, we're just going to let this one roll. We're not going to do a sponsor mention. We're not going to do a promotion here. And that became a thing of its own. So it really is that art and listening to the crowd and letting them run the game to make it bigger, to make it unique, to make it something special for the team and everybody involved.
What's the catfish story? How did the catfish come to be?
So there's a million different stories. The one I go with.
Let's go with the David Kells catfish story.
Yes. So, you know, when we were an expansion franchise, you know, we were in the Central and Detroit was the big brother, and them throwing the octopus was
a classic,
lifelong tradition for Red Wings fans. Folks down here took their own spin on it. I don't know what game it happened with. I don't know who the first person to throw it was, but it was us taking that on our own. You guys have octopus, we have catfish, and over time it's grown. It's kind of been a staple for a long, long time. And then what was the 2017 playoff run? It just took off and had a whole other level of insanity.
Do you have a favorite Predators tradition?
We all have our own. You know, in the office, specifically during the playoffs, everybody is black cat crazy superstitious. I mean, if you stood at one square on a piece of carpet and we scored a hat trick, you stand on that thing for the rest of the game. Whatever you had for lunch, what socks you wore, all those things matter. It's just fun being part of that environment. You know, high-fiving the same person after every game, just whatever you personally have, it's really fun to relive and tweak every year as we have success.
How much is at stake? This may be kind of like a weird question because, of course, you want your team to win. But in terms of the health of the venue, how much is at stake when the team loses versus when the team is hot and winning. It feels like the shows are, you know, always kind of sold out regardless. Is there really a lot at stake, I guess, financially and for the health of the venue when the team loses?
I mean, we're all obviously better off the more successful the team is, but it's really cool to see how things feed off each other. If we have a bunch of hot shows that are big and sold out, well, that draws attention to the hockey team. And the Preds, you know, are doing better and selling more tickets, and vice versa. When there's a lot of spotlight on the Preds and things are running at full tilt, well, then we maybe sell 200 more tickets to a show or 100 more tickets to a show. Just because
is that really how that works? If a hot attention, concert comes
attention
through,
brings attention. Totally. If there's a spotlight on 501 Broadway for hockey, for concerts, for basketball tournaments, for the CMA Awards, it bleeds into everything that you do. It makes everything a little bit better.
Wow, that's so interesting. I guess they're in the venue and they see the advertisements for the concert, or it all yeah, bleeds into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what has, I mean, we talked about a little bit a second ago, but specifically during COVID, like what has your day-to-day been with the venue? Is it just, you know, figuring out when we're going to be able to get people in? You know, have you been doing any renovations during this time? Like what has been the day-to-day managing the venue during this moment?
It's changed a lot over the last, you know, 10, 11 months. Early on, it was rescheduling. You know, the things that we had in spring and summer, you kind of punted to the fall. And then those things that you had punted to the fall, well, you punted a full 12 months. And now we're kind of still in that balancing act of, when can we bring folks back? When does it feel safe? Is it this summer? Or is it later in the summer? Hoping by October we can really get the start packing fans in. But you don't know for sure. So there's a lot of unknowns, and it's managing the calendar and making sure that the opportunities are there for events when it's that time. But you also said other things. We did lots of maintenance over the summer, and you know, things that haven't been painted, we're painting them. We did a good job of putting everybody to work. So if your typical responsibilities had a lot to do with hockey games, well, maybe you're doing some ice maintenance or learning how to drive the Zamboni or doing more volunteer hours for the foundation. So there's always work to do, always ways to still be involved with the community and make the Bridgestone Arena better for when we start bringing in more and more fans.
How do you guys decide when it's time to do like a renovation or redo a piece? Is there someone who's always focused on keeping the venue in top shape? Like I think you guys did big renovation in 2018, if I'm not mistaken.
Luckily it's constant. Yeah. You know, we're 20 something years old now. But we get compliments that we don't feel like a 20-year-old venue. People come in and things are the basic things, you know, things are clean, things are well maintained, things work the way they're supposed to. Those are the basics that I think everybody should do. But we've been fortunate to have, you know, continuous investment over the last, you know, 10 plus years, you know, over $80 million in the arena, all new seats, all new HVAC, new lighting. And then also, I kind of think we're like an amusement park. Every year or two, you need a brand new ride. You need something wow for the fans to see. So we did things like built a massive new team store several years ago. We put a jersey roller coaster in. So, you know, you order your jersey in the first period. They put your name and number on the back, and then they put it on the carousel for you to see and pick up in the second or third period. You know, refaced all the concession stands and, because we want to invest in the arena, because we want the fans to come back and have a good time and realize, hey, I spent X number of dollars for a night out to see a game or to come to a concert. And I see where that money is going. You know, I see that money is being reinvested into a place I love and the place that I have great memories with.
And, you know, the entertainment's going to be great. The food's always good. I always look forward to a show at Bridgestone. I'll eat dinner at the venue. That's my go-to. So there's always events happening in Nashville, obviously. And I think, you know, most venues are, you know, it's always a conversation with agents, you know, what are the other events happening when you're booking a show? Is there something that's going to cannibalize this event? As the big arena in town, when you're booking other shows, I'm just curious, do other events happening in Nashville affect that? Like if there's a show at the Ryman, that's a big show, or somewhere else, or because the arena is kind of the main place, maybe with the exception of Nissan, do you just kind of plow through booking and does everyone have to cater to Bridgestone?
No, that's another one of the things that's great about the community is everybody wants everybody else to be successful. So you're aware. I mean, we communicate a lot, and so you want to know what other big things are happening in town. One, so we're not surprised, but also the artist or performer who's coming through doesn't want to be surprised that somebody else was the same night or 2 days before or 2 days after. because you want every event to sell as many tickets as you can. Again, because success brings success. If there's a great show that sells out the Exit Inn Marathon or the Ryman, that means that performer can take the next step next time or in a couple of years and eventually play the arena. While we don't completely put up a stop sign or a not open sign on a certain night, you kind of work around everything to make sure everybody can be successful as possible.
To what degree is curation taste brought into the acts that play the venue? Or if you believe you can sell it or you're willing to front the bill, does everyone get booked? For example, you know, if there was someone very controversial, but they could sell the tickets, you know, would you book them in the arena?
Oh, everything's taken into account for sure. Some performers at a certain time in their career probably don't make sense to play Bridgestone Arena. And all those things are considered. And it's not, you know, just David Kells is the traffic cop. You know, it's a conversation with the promoter and the agent and the manager and everybody kind of involved to say, hey, does this make sense at the right time? And then on the flip side of it, the curation of programming, you know, I want to make sure we have something for everybody. You know, are there gaps in our programming? Are there some certain parts of the community that we're not serving? I'm trying to get more Latino or Spanish speaking performers to come. We've had one show with a group a couple of years ago, Banda MS. And, you know, that show did well. It was a Sunday night, I think. It did, you know, several thousand people, but that was the first time we'd had a Spanish speaking headliner there. So how do we get them to come back again? How do we grow that to make sure that every population in Nashville is being served by some type of entertainment at Bridgestone Arena?
Could Bridgestone have, I feel like Bridgestone of all venues could have a residency like the Billy Joel residency in New York. It feels like Garth Brooks could have a residency. I mean, he's done a million shows there. Chris Tomlin maybe has a little bit of a residency thing he plays every year.
Right.
Like, has there ever been talk of a residency, or what would it take to bring one to Bridgestone?
That's something we're honestly working on. We've thrown that out to, you know, managers and agents several times to see who makes sense. But like we said earlier, it has to be the right time in the performer's career, the right time for the city and everything to work like that. Because it takes something special to sell out, you know, multiple arena shows in a year. So it takes the right performer. Yeah, in the market. So I do think, you know, similarly to New York, we have a great population that will come out, but you also have that tourism part that can help feed a couple extra ticket sales here and there. But the stars all have to align, but those are totally conversations that we have.
I think Garth is probably one of the only people I could think of who would really make sense. Is there anyone else that could possibly do it?
Oh, we have a short list, but we don't talk about shows until the shows are confirmed.
Until the shows are confirmed. Fair enough, David Kells. I just learned about this rehearsal hall that Bridgestone also has, mm-hmm. which I didn't even realize there was space in the building for a massive rehearsal hall. But how does that work? So artists are always coming in and setting up their rigs in a normal time.
Yeah,
so running their show.
Yeah, so the corner of, what is it, 5th and DeMumbrian, there's a big, essentially, soundstage rehearsal hall space where people can set up their entire stadium or arena production and sit for 2 days, 5 weeks, whatever it takes to get things ready for to go up, back out on the road. And it's great because we're able to develop great relationships with the touring crew and the performers that maybe you wouldn't have when they, you know, the buses and trucks show up at 6 a.m. and they're out at 1 a.m. It's not the same as if you're there for multiple weeks on end, where you're going to have coffee in the morning with folks or beers after work. And people become familiar with us. And it's also a great service for the community. You know, anytime touring professionals can spend 2 more days, 3 more weeks at home, that's a great thing for them and their families, as opposed to having to rent a smaller arena or go out of town for extended period of time for rehearsals. So everybody from the sound guys, light guys, set designers get to spend a couple more days or weeks at home with their families and just be people rather than be on the road.
That's so cool, though. I bet that's so fun to see those shows rehearsing and putting everything together.
It is fun because, you know, they'll usually set up, go out on the road and maybe close down the tour or come to us to the middle of the tour. So it's fun to see it when it's just trusses and sticks of lights and some hanging PA boxes to the whole shebang when it comes to selling out the show.
Are you in most of the shows? Like, do you see most of the concerts that happen?
Yeah, I make sure that, you know, even though it's busy and you're walking around talking with folks and dealing with other issues. I make sure to poke my head in for 3 or 4 songs every night, because that's the fun of it. You know, when the lights go down and people cheer and scream.
Do you ever get sick of that feeling when the lights go down?
No, that is fun, because I do realize that we are not selling air and water. We are selling something that people choose to come to. They choose to, you know, get a babysitter, buy 2 tickets, come downtown and have a great time at a hot Preds game or watch a concert. And it's just, it feels good that people choose that. That people say, this is worth my time. This is worth my money. And again, I don't have to know every song the performer's singing to see somebody else screaming every word at the top of their lungs and get some enjoyment out of that.
Which artist has brought in the most production, or like, what's an artist that has just brought in like a crazy, crazy amount of production?
It gets bigger and bigger all the time. So all arenas have a certain rigging capacity or rigging weight that you're allowed to bring in before you have to have, you know, special rigging accommodations. And it used to be once every 3 or 4 years, somebody would, you know, need a special evaluation.
Challenge that.
Now it's like 3 or 4 times a year. You know what, Drake's last production was massive. Justin Timberlake's known for putting on a huge show. Taylor Swift puts in great big shows. What Travis Scott had the roller coaster that went out and back. So production gets bigger and bigger every year. But again, that's reinvesting into the fan experience. Performers are going out on the road. Their ticket prices are what they are, but you're paying. You get to see what you're paying for. You're not just paying for the hits. You're paying for the extravaganza of the whole thing. It's just fun to see.
But does the crew kind of hate when people bring in big production because it makes their life so much harder to set everything up? And
that's a
they like
a source of pride. If you're on a road crew that's doing something bigger, badder, and newer than anybody else, you let people know that you're doing something bigger, badder, and newer than anybody else.
They love to see it. Yeah.
Oh yeah. If you can do something that somebody else said it was impossible, you put your flag in that and let it be known.
Like, what are some of the crazy feats that people have done? You mentioned a couple, like there was the roller coaster. Mm-hmm. Kiss always puts on an amazing show. I saw Kiss at Bridgestone with the pyro. That's always crazy, right?
When that's always pyro. Fun. Trying to think of a specific thing. You know, Kanye West had that floating stage at one show. Trying to think other things. You know, the CMA Awards and the CMT Awards, they always do something big and impressive every year, because they're competing for TV eyeballs as well as the crowd in the arena. So you want to see something different than you saw last year. And then, you know, us personally during the playoffs, we want to up that production value. We want to do something special to wow the fans, because it's a different level of energy from the team and from the crowd. And again, we want them to know that what they're buying, and you're buying a ticket to a great experience, and that we value you coming. So there's going to be something fun there for you.
Absolutely. Have there ever been conversations about the Grammys being at Bridgestone?
I think years and years ago, that was one of the things when the arena was first built. And I forget when it was, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, we did the Grammy nomination concert. So it was a live TV broadcast of, I forget how many categories they announced, but we did that with us as well. And who knows, maybe down the line, that is something that makes sense when everybody's calendars align.
But just like the residency, we can't announce anything that is not that is not ready to go. Okay, scientifically speaking, and I want to get very scientific and very technical about this. I'm curious, during a sporting event and during a concert, what's the best seat in the house, truly? Because the front row is not necessarily the best for a concert, even though it might be the most expensive. Let's say with a sporting event, where's the best place to view it?
Maybe I'm spoiled because at hockey games, I've been able to bounce around and, you know, been there for 15 plus years. So I've kind of seen it from everywhere.
Where do you go? Like, where do you think, where like is your kinda, go-to spot?
For hockey, I like kind of mid-level. You're able to see the action on the ice. You see plays develop. So kind of that mid, that 200 level for hockey, and concerts kind of midway up on and halfway back on the 100 level. Again, you're close enough. You can see the performers, you can see expressions. But you're far away back, you can take the spectacle of it, you know. Like you said, sometimes sitting on the front row isn't what you want to do. Like a Roger Waters show, you miss so much if you're sitting on the front row because there's so
that's
much
so, true,
there's
yeah.
so much production. You're gonna miss the flying pig, those types of things. So you want to be a little bit further back. But really it's fun to take it in from anywhere because it's that communal experience. You're around people who have a like-minded form of entertainment. You love the same songs, you love the same team, whatever that is. So you're singing along or cheering with somebody, complete stranger, but it's great if it's in the 300 level or down on the floor.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Roger Waters, I've seen a million times play. It's always good to be back. Casey Musgraves, I was on the floor when she played Bridgestone last year. I thought that was an amazing place to be because you could really see her band and her, her little subtleties with it. When Bridgestone wins, you know, an award like in Pulitzer or it's like top 10 venues in America or you know, whatever it is, does that really boost morale or do you champion those or do you go, okay, great, let's just move on to next year and try win it again?
Or no, we do a good job of celebrating everything as a company. A couple of years ago, our security department got our national recognition. The beer cart came out for everybody. You know, it wasn't just something that security just celebrated on their own. With the sales department, hits certain benchmarks, we all celebrate. So by all means, those national awards and recognition are celebrated by everybody in the arena because everybody put it together. You know, we don't win awards if operations and housekeeping didn't do their job on the overnight. You know, if shows consistently come into a dirty backstage and a stage that's not set, well, then you're not getting that recognition. On the front of house side, if we're not selling a couple more tickets here, a couple more tickets there, we're not getting that recognition. So it all feeds together. So we all celebrate together and it's fun.
We all celebrate together. David, thanks for taking the time. My favorite place to see a show is at an arena. And I love the Bridgestone Arena. It's probably my second favorite arena next to my hometown arena, Madison Square Garden. I'm a little biased. But Bridgestone is special. And it's such a cool, you feel a vibe going into it and coming out just because of where it is. And when you're in it, I think it's one of the best venues to see a place because wasn't it designed for concerts if I'm not mistaken originally?
That is something that's unique. We were, if you build it they will come. There was not a pro team in Nashville when they were designing the arena, so if you look at the configuration of the bowl there are more seats facing the stage than maybe if it was designed strictly as a sports arena it would have been even 360. So there are some unique things with us. People say we have, it's easier to mix sound in there and it sounds better for fans, all those types of things, because we are a music town and it does make sense to not just focus on the sports side of things, to make it useful for every type of event that we could have.
I think the Garden has a similar feeling where there's a lot of great seats. Bridgestone, I feel like there's a million great seats. Every seat might be a great seat. I always felt like the Barclays Center when I was seeing shows was very square. It was great to see sporting events. You would always feel like you were at the wrong angle for concerts. That's just my opinion though. But I always appreciate Bridgestone. I always feel like there's a good seat. No matter where I am, I always enjoy it.
And we are a little bit smaller. You know, for hockey, we're 17,000. You know, concerts in that 15 to 16,000, depending on the stage setup. So it is a little bit more intimate maybe than some of the bigger arenas where, you know, the 300 level is that much further away. We're pretty compact. So you're on top of the performer or you're on top of the game. So you feel a little bit more close.
Absolutely. Where you're from Alabama originally?
No, I grew up,
is that true?
In Nashville.
Where did I read that?
No, I lived in Alabama.
You lived in Alabama.
My dad worked for General Motors, so we moved about every 3 years. But we got here when I was in middle school. And I went to high school down in Franklin. And, you know, we were one of those towns that didn't get shows. You know, to go see U2, you had to drive to Birmingham or Atlanta. Or to go see even club shows. Nashville didn't have the same infrastructure and the same support that it does now. And it's wonderful to be part of that growth to help, you know, bring performers to town. So folks don't have to drive 2 to 3 hours to see something great. It's coming to you, but it also comes because people are buying tickets. You know, again, like I said, shows go where they know they can be successful, where they can sell the tickets. So because fans come out and buy tickets to events, we're more likely to get another play or the first leg of the play, or one show becomes a double. And it all just kind of feeds on itself.
Why is that valuable to get the first leg of the show? Or is it just a pride thing that the tour is willing to do it? Or does that actually bring some kind of value when you get closing night or the first night of a tour?
No, I think the first leg versus the second leg that's announced. Because again, when Nashville wasn't always on the top of the routing, you would see a difference in ticket sales. If fans didn't think it was coming to your town, and they wanted to go see the show, they'd go see it someplace else. But if you're part of that first announcement, if you're part of that first run, then the locals know they don't have to drive or fly to go see something unless they just want to see it again. It was that good that they want to see it twice.
Now, you started at smaller venues when you're coming up in the industry, like you used to work at the Exit with the Exit Inn,
yeah.
Right? Do you ever miss the, I'm sure that there's a lot of stress that goes into Bridgestone shows. Do you ever miss the charm and the intimacy of the club show and working on those kinds of events, or not really?
Yeah, it's all fun. I say it's kind of the same thing, just with more bars and more toilets. You know, it's security, it's advancing a show, it's advertising, it's, you know, customer relations. It's all kind of the same. I was just really, really fortunate to work in a small environment where it was, you know, me and a couple other people, where you're doing a little bit of everything. So now, working on the arena level, I've kind of done a little bit of everything. And so I feel like I can add insight to the nooks and crannies of everybody's operations.
Is that the best way to come up in the industry? Start with clubs, work your way through that, and then grow to arenas? Is it kind of tricky if you just jump into the arena game?
I don't know. I know what I've done, I enjoyed, but I'm sure there's other ways to get to wherever you want to be. I do feel I'm very, very fortunate. Quite often on this side of the fence, you have to work from a small market and a smaller venue to a bigger market and a bigger venue, where I've been able to do all of that in Nashville. Like I said, years ago, we didn't sell a lot of tickets and we weren't that first route of the tour. So we were, you know, a secondary or tertiary market. The market has grown. My career has been able to grow with it. I've been able to, I like to think, contribute a little bit to that. So I've been able to stay here and have a great job.
Absolutely. Okay. What's the best concession at Bridgestone? And I'll let you run because I know how busy you are.
No, it's quite all right.
Best food shop at Bridgestone.
It's hard to leave the staples and just go with a hot dog. I mean, it's portable, it's quick, it's easy. We have a couple of good hot dog stands. I just get sauerkraut and mustard and I'm on my way. Just make sure I don't get mustard on my suit when I'm working the show.
Do you pay for anything at the show, or does everyone know you there? Do they just hand you food? Like, do you pay for anything?
We do buy our own food. Yes, I buy my own food.
They don't compensate that there, because I think, like, in a normal job, there'd be a snack section. Maybe they bring in pizza every now and then. Does that ever happen at Bridgestone, or you're always paying for food?
No, there is food for folks who are working the games and all that kind of stuff. But if I'm walking up to a concession stand, I'll buy a hot dog for sure.
But did they know you there? Does everyone know you there? And they go, David, hello. This one's on me.
I wouldn't go that far. People know me because I'm there a lot, for sure.
You're there a lot. What's any crazy backstage stories that are shareable?
It's not as nuts as you would think. There aren't, you know, people bashing in walls or anything like that. Probably the craziest stuff happens with WWE. It feels like they're writing the story as the day is going on. And so they may come to you and go, hey, do you know where we can get a goat? And then, you know, 4 hours later, the goat is part of the show. And, you know, it's a magic goat because there's a leprechaun wrestler, and just crazy stuff that you wouldn't think of on a normal day. You know, we were standing backstage one time and one of the production folks goes, so how much would a mirror cost back here? And then 10 seconds later, you see one wrestler run away and another wrestler chasing him with a sledgehammer, and then the camera crew following them. So it's all just kind of fun and by the seat of their pants and how it comes together.
They're the ones that bring the chaos. It's not the rock stars. It's the rock stars are tamed, typically speaking.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. Yeah.
Do you ever tour other venues, or do you ever make that part of your job to sort of just travel around and see what other venues look like or what they're doing?
Oh, by all means, we're all venue nerds and we love seeing and experience what other people have going on, because we're not above stealing a good idea from somebody else. So every couple of years we do try to take a trip en masse to see something. And it's funny seeing all the staff come. So if it's your first business trip or your 400th business trip, people walk into a venue and start looking at the concession lines and looking at how the bathrooms are queued up and what concessions do they have. And that's just how our brain is worked. Sometimes I say we're broken. You can't just sit down and have a good time at a show. You're watching what the security guy's doing or what's that beer vendor doing, all those types of things. But that's also part of the fun.
I've always wondered this as a lifelong arena attendee. When I was younger, I could only afford the nosebleed tickets. That's where I would buy my tickets. But I would always sneak onto the lower bleachers, or I would sneak onto the floor. And sometimes, you know, I'd make it. Other times the staff would say, kid, where are you doing? You gotta get out of here, go back to your seat. And other times people would be really aggressive. And, you know, I never got kicked out, but people would really yell at me and like grab me. And you know, do you give advice to this? Like, hey, if kids are trying to sneak onto the floor, handle it this way. or is everyone kind of on their own? How do you guys approach security like that?
Well, we actually do have, it's called One Goal Training, where every single person in the arena goes through it. So from our CEO to that hourly person working their first shift. So we're all taught of how to treat people and what customer experience should be. And, you know, if you see somebody spill some popcorn, just go to the concession stand, show your work badge and get them popcorn. You know, don't, you know, blame them for spilling the popcorn or the soda, just replace it. It's, you know, minimal monetary cost to us, but it means the world to whoever just lost their popcorn. We right. always try to create those better moments for folks. So if somebody happens to try to sneak down, by all means, we're not going to rough them up and throw them out the front door. Maybe that's where you came from in New York, but that's not how you do it down here.
That's not the Nashville way.
Not the Nashville way.
You know, in Nashville, everyone's always very nice, especially at Bridgestone, obviously. I've never had an issue at Bridgestone. Everyone's always very friendly there. I have to ask also, I'm sure you ask this all the time, but where are some of the best concerts that you've seen at Bridgestone?
Paul McCartney in 2010 was amazing. You know, the city had the floods in April and that show was in July. And it's one of those things where I don't think he played the market, Beatles, Wings, Paul McCartney, anything.
He never, yeah.
And
he recorded a little bit in Nashville, like correct. Early. Yeah, but he never played.
Nope. And so that was his first performance. Again, like I said, it was after the flood. He and his management team were very sensitive about when they went on sale, thinking, hey, is it okay to come essentially to a disaster area? But we wrote letters. The mayor, Carl Dean at the time, wrote a letter saying, no, Nashville is open for business. This is the type of thing that we want. So that show definitely stands out in my mind. Also, that same time, we had James Taylor and Carole King. They were the first show back after the flood. And they thanked the crowd for coming out, realizing there are bigger things going on in this community than a rock show. Thank you for coming out with us. And then all the benefit shows that we've been able to do. Anytime there's something in need in the community, it's wonderful to see how the entertainment community comes together to support it, to give back. It's something as simple as, hey, we're going to have a great night out and you forget about your worries. Or we're going to raise millions of dollars for whatever it might be in town. And it's wonderful to have that kind of collaboration throughout the city that I don't think would exist in other places.
Absolutely. David, we've said so much. We've learned a lot here. We've learned mid-level section might be the best section to see a sporting event. We've learned the best way to get free popcorn is to spill the popcorn you currently have.
Yes, and sure.
And we've learned that we're constantly renovating Bridgestone. You're always going to see something new next time you come in, possibly. Hot dogs are the way to go. One of the best Bridgestone snacks. What have we left out here? Have we left anything out? And we're going to be open for business soon, I hope, at full capacity, relatively.
Yeah, and the reason we're able to do that is because, you know, the collaboration with the health department, with the NHL, with, you know, Vanderbilt's our healthcare provider, giving us that information, but it's also because the fans who come out understand the guidelines and follow those. You know, wearing a mask, sitting at a sporting event may not feel natural, but because, you know, 2,000 people do that today, 6,000 people can come to the arena later on. So it's just that buy-in and that support that we get from the fans and from everybody attending the events that allow us to do more during this weird, weird time. And we all look forward to the time where we can put more and more people back to work, where this production gear that's in a warehouse on Cowan Street can be put on a semi-truck and brought to Bridgestone Arena, and the lights and the sound and the stage hands and the ushers and ticket takers can all go back to work, and we can all come out and have a good time and have a beer and sing along to our favorite performer.
That's what I miss the most right now. If I watch a YouTube video or something of a show, a massive show, I just go, oh my God, I wish I was at that right now. That just looks so fun.
You know, watching the streaming stuff is fun. You know, you get to see your performer do what they do, but you do miss that communal aspect. You do miss rubbing shoulders with a stranger and standing in somebody else's puddle of beer.
But I think, you know, it's funny how, you know, arena shows used to feel so like the religious experience, or they used to feel so special, so amazing, godlike, the performers on stage. And then as you go to more and more shows and you start to get older, some of the magic goes away. And I would never leave a show early. You know, later in my life, you know, I would start leaving shows early before the encore. I'm like, whatever, I show up late. Like it becomes less sacred, but I think it's going to feel sacred again when we return back to shows, at least for a minute. I think there's going to be something sacred feeling to it.
there's going to be wonderful first times for a whole calendar year. It'll be, you know, the first time we do a show, then the first time we do a rock show, the first time we do a country show, the first time we do a hip hop show, the first time that fan comes in the building, the first time, you know, a performer performs a big sold out show at Bridgestone Arena again. And those are all wonderful moments to celebrate and remember. And like you said, make sure you remember all of those things. Take in every last note of every last song that you can, because we've lost it for a year and it hurts, you know, it hurts to lose something that was such a big part of your life for so long.
Absolutely. David, thank you for taking the time. Cannot wait to get back into a show. Hopefully I'll see you around the halls eating a hot dog. Whatever it is, I'm looking forward to it.
By all means, hopefully that happens sooner than later. Thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you. Stay well.
There you have it. Episode 54 with David Kells. Thanks for coming on to the podcast, David. Thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate it. I can't wait to get back into the arenas. If you're anything like me, I'm dying to get back into an arena and see a badass show. And I hope my first one is here at Bridgestone. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to get that hot dog that David Kells always talks about. The Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman, and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content from us, you can subscribe to my newsletter at NashvilleBriefing.com, or you can follow us on socials, everything at Nashville Briefing. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Bye.